Now then, you are very welcome along to another RTE Rugby Podcast, episode 48 of this season. We have been going weekly on these podcasts since August. Plenty of meat left on the bone, though, for us to get through between now and pretty much July when Ireland are over in South Africa. This week, Bernard Jackman and Fiona Coughlan are here with me on the podcast. Lads, the clocks have gone forward. There's knockout rugby ahead of us in the air this weekend, and This is where the fun of the season really starts, Bernard, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's kind of low key, to be honest, isn't it? The build up to the weekend's Champions Cup. I'm sure once teams are announced today and tomorrow, it'll start to pick up. Probably the fact there's so many teams still left in it. It's probably next week when you'll see the real quality start to come true. But it was great to go from Six Nations back to a couple of quiet weeks to now Champions Cups, knockout rugby, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, and feeling like, I mean, there's you could pick out any handful of things between now and the end of July, as I said, to look forward to, whether it's Ireland, South Africa, but even more recently then you've the rest of this Women's Six Nations, you've got the Champions Cup, which, as we've said in the last couple of years, has been slow to get going with the way the pool stages are. But once we've got into these knockouts, they have generally been good. And then throw in the URC end, which we saw last season, gave us plenty of drama as well. Munster and Leinster still have to go down to South Africa as well for their tours. There's a lot ahead of us still between now and the end of July, or end of June for the URC season, and then into July for the internationals.
Yeah, and then you have the Olympics in the end of July as well. Yeah. So there's it's never ending with the rugby, but it's great. And like, it is great knockout stages of Champions Cup, you know, the pool rounds, you give or take them sometimes. And even with this round of 16, there's a lot of repeat games of those pool games. But look, the fact that it's knockout now, that's when it gets exciting. And teams are putting out their best foot forward to see who's going to go and win this.
Well, we'll dive straight into it because we have quite a bit to get through today between the Women's Six Nations and then the URC / Champions Cup review and preview. We'll talk Ireland 21, Italy 27 from Sunday, Fiona. I can see the look on your face as I mentioned it there. Such a deflating feeling afterwards on what was a record-breaking day and a great day, I suppose, off the pitch. A game that Ireland lost, but probably had enough chances to win two or three times over.
Yeah, disappointing, frustrating. I think this was the game that they had to measure themselves on. I know they were looking at those three home games, but I thought this was the one that they had to win. Like, you know, I think it gets harder against Scotland and Wales, but I thought this was going to be the one that could define them and that those improvements that we would have seen. So, look, really frustrating. And as you said, they had so much territory, so much possession, so much quick rough ball, and just couldn't get over the line because of their own errors, really. You know, in fairness, Italy scramble defence was very good and they took their opportunities well and showed all their experience on the pitch, but Ireland had opportunities to win that game.
Yeah, like it feels, Bernard, it was very much a game that Ireland lost rather than Italy won. And I went back looking at it again this morning, and like, all the stats you look at are, if you had actually looked at the stats sheet, I would say, without looking at the final score, you probably would have had a very, very different idea of what way this game went. But ultimately, the one stat that jumped out, Ireland, 28 handling errors, 17 turnovers conceded. That's the game there, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think we didn't really see how poor our skill set was against France, because effectively we were defending for most of the game and we defended, you know, pretty resiliently. But against Italy, obviously, it was a little bit easier to have possession or to get possession. And you could see that Ireland have more clarity in terms of how they want to play, you know, getting those big second rows, running off 10 up the middle of the field, and decent shape to get out wide. But unfortunately, just our skill sets wasn't good enough on the day. And look, it's not, you know, I was in Thomond Park on Saturday night, and Munster's skill set was really poor. You know, it's and they made a load of handling errors as well. So it can happen across all codes. But unfortunately for Ireland, that was an opportunity to get a very important win. And it was our handling errors in particular that let Italy off the hook and now puts us puts us under pressure to try and get something else out of this season. I would agree with Fiona on form. Wales and Scotland look slightly ahead of Italy. Although I would say there's a lot more potential in this Irish team. Like, I thought Italy were an older, kind of settled team and probably won't improve a huge amount, whereas Ireland could improve a lot over the next couple of years, was my take on it. But the problem will be just where do you get those wins that give you that confidence? And if we were to go a wooden spoon, that would be a knock to their confidence for sure.
Yeah, and we saw it last year as well in Fiona when like the confidence is it's a sliding scale where when the confidence starts to get knocked out of you a little bit, it's harder to pick yourselves up. But like even looking at those errors at the weekend, the amount of times where it was errors were compounded by more errors. And it wasn't just a case where someone was making a mistake and they would get back into the 22 and have a go. Like there was the one that jumped out, obviously, was around 28 minutes in where Ireland win a penalty in a pretty kickable position. They decide against going for the post. They head for the corner and actually they tried to kick for the far corner of the pitch. Like they were over to the right of the post and tried to hit the left touchline. Dan O'Brien misses touch. Italy cleared the lines. Bevan Parsons knocks on the ball. Someone ahead of her picks it up. It's an offside penalty. All of a sudden, Ireland are back down defending in their own 22. And within a couple of minutes, Italy have gone in and scored a try.
Yeah, it comes back to, I don't think anyone took control of that game. Like I said, they had so much possession, so much tempo and quick ball, but there was no control. They just seemed to just be going 100 miles an hour, but not being able to control going 100 miles an hour. At that point, when that penalty happened, I think Sam Monaghan was down injured and the ref asked her what she wanted. And it seemed like she wasn't sure what she wanted. And Dan O'Brien didn't take control. That's in. It was on the 22, slightly to the right-hand side of the post, really kickable. And there was just no one taking control of that situation. And it happened again in the second half. There was a kick a bit further out. I think it was probably 40 metres. But
yeah.
I think Nicole Fowley and Dan O'Brien had the legs to kick that. And they turned that down as well as right in front of the post. So just that decision-making around, they have no right to be going for corner when their line-out isn't functioning well either. I know they scored a line-out maul try, but in general, their line-out in the 70s, they lost two in Italy's half in the 70th and 75th minute, I think. And I just don't think anyone took control or ownership of that game. And probably comes down to the selection, to be honest with you, and the team that he selected. I go back, they were still in it. They could have won it. And yes, their handling wasn't good enough. And you're talking about professional players now that are professional. Some of them professional, the likes of Parsons, Eve Higgins, professional probably for 4 years. The rest of them professional 18 months. And yeah, like Bernard's right, it can happen in any game. We saw England v Scotland as well and their turnaround in 2 weeks. But I just don't know if there's enough yet in this squad to turn it around in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and the selection stuff then, Fiona, was the big thing last week where you had Grace Moore coming into the back row and Adele McMahon was dropped. And then in the back line, Enya Breen started over Aoife Dalton, who came on in the second half and did quite well again when she came on. On Breen, for example, she was someone we spoke, like ourselves and Philip Doyle spoke about on the podcast last week. And we mentioned that, you know, she is an option at some stage in the championship because she had the extra kicking option as well. And when she was selected, I think we probably all thought that she was going to be leaned on a bit more in the kicking game. But when you look back at it, she only kicked the ball twice over her whatever 60 plus minutes. And you kind of wonder, if you're making a kind of a horses for courses selection like that, you kind of need to cut your cloth to fit it.
Yeah, look, I still think they got territory, so I don't think that was a big thing. But like having not played a game of rugby in a year at any level, to come straight back into international, when Aoife Dalton had played, I thought, extremely well the previous week and didn't deserve to be dropped. So putting her straight in there starting, I thought was a bit strange. Adele McMahon going completely out at the 23 in terms of that's your co-captain. Sam Monaghan hasn't played a game since January, coming back from a really bad concussion. And again, Sam hasn't a huge amount of experience at top level rugby. Like she's only international 3 years. Even before that, you know, she was playing in third division in England, stepped up to Wasps and then obviously moved to Gloucester and is a phenomenal player and had a great game. But just in terms of decision-making, I thought that was a strange one. And then similarly, Hannah O'Connor, who played well last week, gone out of the 23 to put two novices on your bench, no back row cover, two novice second rows who've moved from the backs into the second row on your bench. I just thought it was a little bit naive in terms of selection. I think it'd be interesting to see now whether he double downs on that against Wales and see what he does there in terms of selection. But I just don't think there was any real control or ownership of that game in terms of decision making, or even slowing it down when they were going 100 miles an hour and, you know, forcing errors upon themselves.
And like, that's it as well then, Bernard, like as a coach, where you're trying to figure out when's the right opportunity. Well, even trying to allow the players obviously to make those decisions on the pitch about when is the right time to go wide. And I think probably part of the frustration was when Ireland were playing direct and were getting the ball into the hands of Aoife Wafer or Sam Monaghan, they were fairly consistently getting over the gain line and actually making dents in the Italian attack. And it was just probably either when they were going wide, there were handling errors, but also as well, maybe on a handful of times, there were just bad decisions about when to go wide. Like there was a crossfield kick in the first half that never really looked on. And sometimes it was just forcing it when maybe a few more tighter phases would probably have sucked in the defence a little bit more and opened up those channels.
Yeah, look, I think there's certainly an argument you could make that maybe we're not ready to play as fast as we're playing, or with the width that we want to play with. Maybe our skill set isn't good enough yet, and you cut your cloth and you play a little bit more restricted for now to try and get wins. Or, like, I don't know what the mandate is. Is the mandate, like, get, you know, qualify straight away, qualify for the next World Cup, you know, by nature of performance or results? Or is it just grow and build and in 3 or 4 years' time have a team who have, you know, a more elaborate game plan? That's not clear. Like, is it results driven or is it more development? But I certainly think you could ask the question around is the game plan that we're trying to play a little bit too much of a stretch for the experience we have at the moment? Certainly at the weekend it looked like it was, but you know, it'd be more interesting, I suppose, over the course of the whole tournament as a whole, if we can actually execute. Obviously he feels that training and stuff we can, but under the pressure of a Six Nations match, we fell short, to be fair.
Like, they've come out and said that top three is what they want, and obviously that's put a huge dent in the playing field. But they've such huge opportunities to still qualify for the World Cup, because it's gone from 12 teams to 16 teams.
Yeah.
So even if they end up in WXV3, there's still opportunities for them to get there because of that expansion of the tournament. So, like, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. You know, going away, love to see them in WXV2, and, you know, play a bit more harder games than they had in WXV3. But, like, I don't think all is lost not finishing top three.
Yeah, like, is it, if we're thinking rationally about it, Fiona, is if they were to end up in WXV2 later on this year, is that, if you're talking long term, is that actually kind of like the ideal landing spot for this team at this moment in time?
Yeah, I think
as much as being in WXV1 would be fantastic and all that, but let's be realistic about it.
I think in terms of playing tighter, closer games as opposed to just getting beaten off the park, you probably learn more. And teams that are probably at the same level are slightly ahead of you. Like, you look at Scotland and Italy were both in that last year. They both won their three games, Scotland winning out the tournament on points differential. But I think definitely in terms of Scotland, I think they've been playing some really good rugby. So it gave them a chance to develop and play the way they want to play at a level that they were able to do it at. So I think WXV2 would be really good for them.
And then let's talk about some positives before we finish up on it as well, because for all the handling errors that were there, I think there's clear signs that we are actually seeing some really, really good attacking shape, and there's a much better structure on the way they're going about what they want to do this year, even if the execution still isn't there, Fiona. And we've also seen, like you mentioned a little bit earlier, where England, that game against Scotland, where they had the 22 handling errors and 24 turnovers and something like that. And when you have 2 weeks to work on things, I'm not saying you're going to turn into a world-class team overnight, but it does allow you an opportunity to fix a few small things. And the handling errors and the unforced errors and the lack of composure, some of those things can actually be fixed relatively quickly with just a little bit better decision-making.
Better decision-making, players taking a bit more ownership, You know, I think it's a very happy camp. I think we're getting seeing some quality players. Like, I think Aoife Wafer, she's only 21. Like, I think
turned 21 8-9 days ago.
Yeah, and like, she's now the player that's playing since she's four. She's come up through a pathway. So we're seeing now those players coming into it. So we just need more and more of them each year. I think similarly for Dalton, I think she's been absolutely excellent every opportunity. I don't think we've cemented our 10 position. So I think that's a real key in the way that they want to play. And like, I've no problem with their attacking shape taking time to find their feet. Like, he hasn't been with them. He only came in, when did he come in? October officially for that double XP. So he hasn't been with them a huge amount of time. So that's going to take time, that attack and shape and coming together. But I think more confident, the more confidence they get in it, I think we'll see a reduction in handling errors. But yeah, players have to take ownership as well as some of that.
And Birch, like Fiona mentioned Aoife Wafer there. She was someone I wanted to talk about as well. And specifically the fact that, like, as I say, she's been playing since she's been a little kid. We're starting to actually see some of those people from that generation now who have been playing rugby since a very, very young age. Like, we'll say, Fiona, like your generation, a lot of you would have played lots of different sports when you were younger and kind of came to rugby later. But when you look at Aoife Wafer, the way she runs with the ball, the way she carries it, the way she moves around the pitch, she looks like a rugby player rather than just an athlete, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah, and that's
you can see some of these players are coming through now.
Yeah, and that's probably why we're behind, to be fair, is that there hasn't been enough people playing the game all the way through from a young age who are like very, very specialist, and credit to the people who've cross transferred from other sports. And they've been we badly needed them and they've done, some of them have done brilliantly, but the reality is they're probably got in there quicker than maybe they should, because there just hasn't been that depth of player who's comfortable. And that's the success. Like, that's why the men's rugby is successful in Ireland, is you have a very clear pathway. You have players who have been playing the game since they're 4 or 5 in really competitive environments all the way through schools or youths, you know, talent ID programs. And the funnel gets very narrow at the top and only the best get through. And that's where we need to get to, in women's rugby in Ireland, where, you know, there's a really clear pathway, really healthy, safe, competitive environment in clubs. You know, it'd be great to see it being played in schools as well, but obviously isn't played as much in schools in the women's game. But just to create more players like Aoife Wafer, who, when you look at her playing on Sunday, you say, well, she's going to be, you know, a star for Ireland for the next 12, 13, 14 years. You know what I mean? That's exactly what we need to get. Whereas the professionalization and bringing in you know, coaches to the senior team is great. But unless we get more clarity and a more vibrant pathway, it's always going to be difficult to, it's going to be very difficult to see ourselves beating England and France, who are way ahead in that area. But obviously Scotland, Wales and Italy are more in our eye line.
Yeah, and like, Bernard, see how long it's taken the men's game to get to where they are now, what they had to put in place. And you're right about the schools game. I think there's huge opportunity there. But even like this weekend, seeing the under-18s girls playing over at that Six Nations Championship, the under-20s are starting now. So those pathways are now starting, but it is going to take that time. And it's a slow burner, but we need to see better performances on the pitch. But it's tough when you have those players coming in and trying to develop them at international level.
It was quite... It's been quite eerie as well in this first couple of games. Fiona's seen, you know, Irish flanker, red scrum cap, absolutely tearing it up out there. There was something kind of neat about it.
Look, I just went through, yeah, but Claire Malloy as well. I think she models a lot of what Claire Malloy did and Claire Malloy was probably ahead of her time when she was playing the Irish women's team. And like the injury that she came back from, the Wafer came back, she ruptured her hamstring as well. Yeah. And just her recovery from that, her diligence about it, and it's great to see her back and what she's going to bring to the team for the next number of years.
Yeah, because I do remember it was two years ago. It was the game against Italy 2 years ago, where I was down there covering it in Cork, and she came on in the second half for her debut. I think she was just turned 19 at that stage, and Greg McWilliams threw her in there. So in fairness to Greg, he knew there was a talent coming through there, and as you said, it was a horrible hamstring injury that delayed her second cap until the WXV. But I think we all know who Aoife Wafer is now, so we'll be looking out for her more in this championship. We'll move it on though to the provinces, and we'll start with Leinster. They were up on Friday night, beat the Bulls 47-17 at the RDS. They host the Leicester Tigers in the Investec Champions Cup on Saturday evening. And Bernard, was that second half against the Bulls as good as we've seen Leinster this season?
Yeah, I thought they were ruthless, because I actually think their attack at times hasn't been anywhere near as fluid as it was under Lancaster. But we all know they've been focusing mainly on their defence and their kicking game and their physicality. But against the Bulls, it was just their ability to capitalise on any mistakes or weakness in the Bulls' defence and score very quickly, like 7 tries, some of the offloading, some of the support play, and the speed at which they played at. Like, the Bulls were out on their feet the last 20 minutes, you know, having had a very good first half, and obviously their scrum was a big weapon. They just didn't really get any change out of their kicking game. And I thought Rob Russell in particular was excellent in everything he did, but particularly in terms of his high ball work and tidying up any scraps. So big step forward for him, even though he's been excellent. But that was just another step forward in terms of the quality of opposition he was up against. And, you know, when Jimmy O'Brien comes back, I think it's not a clear choice around the wing spot. I think Rob Russell has laid down a pretty impressive marker. Yeah, and Leinster, obviously, the bench they had was very strong, and he came on, and that was the big difference in the end. Just the power that Leo was able to use off the bench, I thought was exceptional and puts him in really good stead. For no one's really worried about Leicester. I mean, you know, the consensus is that Leinster will be true, and it'll be La Rochelle, and that's the game that Leinster need to watch out for. But
In fairness, like, you know, a good chunk of that and a good reasoning for that is Leinster have beaten them 3 times in the last 24 months, and each of those games have been relatively comfortable.
No, I'm not worried about a meter, but I'm just saying it's just I'm not. It's just it's kind of. And more so because they were so good against the Bulls. I think the only really worry for Leinster was first game back. What the first game would look like, or second game would look like with their internationals, reintegrating them. And I think that's gone very well. And they'll build nicely for this week and get through it. And look, this season, it's I know next year they'll have RG Steinman and they'll have a new tight head.
Yeah.
But you really have to try and win. They will try, but you nearly have to close out Europe this year, I think.
Yeah, like, it's James.
We're not going to write off any English team after what England did to Ireland, but I think the fact that they're coming here as well, I think.
Yeah.
You can't see it based on Leicester's performances, even in the Premiership, that they're going to cause too much trouble to Leinster.
Yeah, like, and Jack Conan said it after the match, Fiona as well, where he was saying, like, that they could hardly have handpicked a better game to have before a big Champions Cup match than having the Bulls coming over to Dublin. And that was a fairly stacked Bulls team as well. There were four of the Springbok World Cup winners were in there. It was as close as they probably could get to a full team. They had a decent enough bench there as well, and were just blown out of it in the second half. And one of the things afterwards that pleased Leo Cullen was, he mentioned himself, and Bernard, you said it as well, that the scrums at the start of the game, Leinster got absolutely hosed in a few of them. But to their credit, they actually kind of worked it out on the fly and didn't have to make drastic changes to, you know, bring on replacements early or anything like that. As the game wore on, they just kind of adapted and got used to it. And that's the kind of thing that could be the difference between a big win and an awful defeat later on in the season, Fiona.
Yeah, like, it was, what, 3 penalties in the first 12 minutes for the scrum, and they found a way to fix it. It was like they worked out the gap that they wanted and got the ref back on their side, who obviously had gone against them for those first 3. So, yeah, being able to fix things on the fly is really important. I'm still not sure about Leinster's scrum if they come up against the La Rochelle's or whatever again. But, you know, the fact that they're fixing problems on the pitch is what coaches want to see. You know, they give it to the players when they're on the pitch, and it's over to them to try and sort it out.
For for as good as they were in the second half, though, Bernard, were they lucky they did it with 15 players on the pitch?
Yeah, no doubt. I think Luke McGrath got away with it. Well, for me, it was a red card. Just a very reckless challenge. So unlike him. He's obviously a very tough, competitive player, but I don't know what was going through his mind when he was chasing across there, when it was pretty obvious Aaronsa was going to score. And you obviously want to make him have to put it down and finish it, but I just thought his body angle, the lack of a real clear wrap was pretty reckless, and obviously head on head. So, I thought that should have been red. There's been a bit of a trend over the last 3 or 4 weeks to kind of go to yellow more than red. I'm not obsessed with red cards, whatever. But I think that's when there's no bunker system, the TMO and the referee need to take responsibility for that decision. And if there is a reckless head high contact, well then it's red. You know, it's red. I don't see any real mitigating factors on that. Aaronson wasn't trying to step at the last minute. So for me, the tackler is the one responsible there. So 12-11, the score was. Look at the way the second half unfolded and Leinster's power off the bench. It wasn't going to change the result. But I think when you take that and you take the ruling out of the try, second half, when Aaronson himself was actually, you know, flight kicked Ross Byrne, and I think that the Bulls certainly would feel, or you could feel, that it was a bit of hometown decisions on both those. You know, I think there's the fly hack against Ross Byrne. If that's not a try, it's not even a penalty. They're not even looking at it. You know, I think Ross milked it a bit, and in fairness, as he tends to do. But yeah, just a couple of little things there didn't cause the results to be different in any way, but certainly shows the advantage of playing at home.
Yeah, and Jake White was fairly gracious in defeat, in fairness, afterwards as well. He was asked about the yellow / potential red card decision, and he kind of just said, well, you know, he didn't think it made much of a difference. He said Leinster are by a mile the better team, so fair play to him for that. Final point on Leinster then, Fiona. Harry Byrne, are we starting to see him kick on a little bit now?
Oh, look, I think so. I think that was one of his best performances. I think he's obviously come back from Six Nations and having some time with the national squad, and he's definitely seen what he is capable of. He had such a bad run of injury as well. He never had like consistent a run of games or a run of form either. So he's actually finally getting that now. So, you know, I think he controlled it really well at the weekend. I think the interesting thing is who goes against Leicester. I genuinely don't know. You would think the week out before Champions Cup, they start Harry. So is he the one to take them into that Champions Cup round 16, or do they revert back to Ross again, who's been steady for them but hasn't gotten them over the line when needed in those finals? So I think that's going to be a key decision for the Leinster coaches to make about who starts the game.
Who are you picking?
I think Harry, based on what we've seen in the last couple of months and the fact that he started last weekend.
Bernard?
I really thought Harry was excellent. The best game I've seen him play for Leinster in terms of the all overall package. But I left the game thinking it was going to be Ross, because I still think he's number one. But I'm wondering, do Leinster think that they can beat Leicester? And it would be a massive game for Harry's development. But I think push comes to shove, will go for Ross.
Okay, we'll see how it goes.
I see what you're thinking there in terms of giving him more game time at a higher level, but then they need to be prepared for La Rochelle or Stormont.
Yeah.
Like, do you not have your path cleared of who you want going in those games? So,
because Ross hasn't played a lot of rugby in the last few months as well.
Yeah, like he hasn't come back from injury as strong. He hasn't had a good run of it. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a huge decision for them to make, to see what direction they're going to go there. I don't know. I think just that they went with Harry last week in the lead into it, that's the only reason, really, probably, and he had a good run.
We'll find out on Friday afternoon. Munster 20, Cardiff 15, Munster playing the Northampton Saints away in the last 16 on Sunday afternoon. Bernard, I know you were down at Thomond Park. Munster got the job done, but it was an all-round uninspiring victory particularly considering they actually had such a strong starting 15 out there.
Yeah, really, really strange, really kind of dead atmosphere. In fairness to the crowd just couldn't, Munster didn't give them anything to get going. You know, I mean, there was no momentum, there was no real like long phase of play or excitement to it. Munster just so sloppy with ball in hand. And again, like their attacking game has been so good for them and they all look to be on the same page. But I don't know what it is. And it's, if you look back to Munster's history, they've often been really poor the week before a big game in Europe. And in fairness, I have to give credit to Cardiff. They came very abrasive, you know, Ellis Jenkins, Alex Kane, Alex Mann were excellent. De Beer gives them a really good variety in their kicking game and accuracy. Josh Adams has probably had his best game for a while. And they were gritty and they stuck in and they took the sting out of the game, going down injured, any break in play. Munster just couldn't get any momentum. And at the end, we're probably lucky enough to win. Now, Cardiff didn't do a huge amount. Obviously, got intercepted on their own line from Ben Thomas. And probably didn't really believe they could win until near the end. Obviously, they kicked a penalty to get a losing drop goal near the end. And Munster were happy to get the ball off the field. You know, it was just a very, very poor performance. But they got a win. And given how strong their team was on paper, like there wasn't a huge amount. RG Slimer will obviously come back in this weekend and he can obviously can change it, the whole thing up. But I think it's more revenge, Champions Cup, you know, going away from home and getting a big scalp. That'll probably get the extra 20% that they were missing out of them.
Is there half a blueprint there, Fiona, for other teams that have seen how if you kind of rush Munster into making some of these decisions that they can be guilty of throwing a few too many loose passes? Like again, like we referenced it when we were talking about the Irish women's team, where they can often be guilty of overplaying it in the wrong positions. And I do wonder sometimes if teams are coming in with the mindset of you might get cut open one or two times, but if you're very, very aggressive and you kind of isolate the second pot outside or the second and third carriers, that if you can kind of rush them into making a couple of bad decisions, there could be some loose passes there that could lead to turnovers.
Look, I think if you're aggressive with any team and cause them to ask questions of their attack, you're going to put them under trouble. I just think Munster were off form. Players didn't take ownership, didn't take control of it. Whether that's the reintegration of the Irish players back in, not a huge amount of them, or whether it was losing Snyman when he was supposed to be playing. I don't know what it was. I don't think Rowntree was able to put his finger on why they were so poor. But yeah, I think Bernard's right. I think they'll step it up this week, going away to Northampton. And, you know, Northampton are flying high at the moment and in the Premiership. And they've spoken a lot about how important this Champions Cup is for them. And to, I suppose, state how good they could be in Europe with some of their performances. So, you know, and that game, when Northampton went to Thomond Park, like, they were down to 13 players for 8 minutes. And, you know, Munster took the lead, but not being able to close out the game. But I think it was because Northampton are actually quite good at the moment.
Yeah, they are. And what will Munster have learned from that game back in January, where, again, like, I mean, Northampton, fair play to them, pulled off an absolutely cracking victory. But if you're a Munster supporter or a Munster player, you're looking back at that game in January as one you should have won.
Should have won because they were down 14 for most of the game and 13 for those 8 minutes. But I suppose it's about when you do get up on them that you have to hammer it home. You can't let them get back in with cheap penalties or giving them cheap pitch position as well. So, like, I think Munster will embrace it. They always embrace these knockout games. And, you know, history has shown that they've come out the right side of it a number of times. But I think Snyman is going to be huge, whether he's in or out. There's still talk of that illness. It's not an injury, it's illness. So hopefully he'll be available for them because he will make a huge difference.
I did see, Bernard, like we talk about Munster often bring themselves up for these sort of occasions. I did see a headline from one of the Northampton players today saying there's no way Munster are going to be as up for this game as we are in Northampton. And I just thought, I've seen this one before.
Yeah. No, yeah, look, sometimes for younger players, they forget what Munster have done sometimes in Europe, you know, maybe, and it's going back 25 years. And they've always been able to find, or sorry, not always, they've often been able to find the extra bit of motivation or doggedness to get a scalp that potentially on paper they don't deserve to. But like that, they're trying to get away from that to a certain extent. They're trying to be more consistent, you know what I mean, week in, week out team. Obviously winning the URC last year was a positive. And it's a test for them. I mean, my memory of that game in Tolman Park, we worked it for RT, I think, is that Munster just turned down shots at goal and kept going to the corner and just being wasteful, you know, when the game was there. And this is a knockout rugby, so I wouldn't see... I thought Crowley kicked well on Saturday night. I would see territory, good defence, and you know, taking your points would be a mindset change, which doesn't really happen in the Premiership. Some of the scores in the Premiership for the last 6-7 months have been, you know, crazy, 40 points to 36, etc. So it's cup rugby now, and Munster are the masters of that. So that for me, that could be the ace they have to play.
Yeah, and like we also saw last year that, you know, they've shown before they can time a run, you know. Peak yeah. A little bit later in the season. The final thing on it though, is there any sense you think that some of the off-field stuff this season has just kind of affected them on the pitch, whether it's Peter O'Mahony's kind of ongoing contract situation, even like Orgie Snyman's stuff happening over Christmas, that there's just been like things like Joey Carberry leaving. There's been a lot of ins and outs and stories of ins and outs and uncertainty over what's happening. Does that often bleed itself onto the pitch, or do we kind of overread those things from...
No, I look at the rumour mill is that it's not a very happy camp, to be fair. And that was all the talk before the match on Saturday night. But there's a job to be done. And look at professional rugby is still in a very mixed place. The majority of clubs are going through that transition of, you know, stalwarts leaving, you know, contract situations being up in the air, etc. So Munster aren't unique in that. And when you see a performance like Saturday night, the Frisch thing as well, like Antoine Frisch, yes. Yeah. You know, there's another example there. And that's no one's fault. It's not blame. It's just certain teams go through that at certain times. But that's certainly been the rumors coming out of camp that it's not a great place, not a great environment at the moment. But I can understand why, you know what I mean? I can understand why. But more importantly, you'd like to see a big performance this weekend to show that it hasn't taken from the goal, which is to win for Munster.
Yeah, and before I move on to Ulster and Connacht, who's going to win on Sunday, Munster or Northampton?
Munster for me.
I just find it hard to write off Munster and knock out rugby.
They're like the Germans.
Yeah, just Northampton are going so well. Hugely in the last week, obviously got hammered the week before. Oh, my heart is saying Munster, so I'm going to go with my heart.
Right. We'll move on to Ulster because it just kind of leads in from what you were saying, Bernard, of, you know, the off-pitch stuff affecting what's happening on the pitch. And, you know, no team has had more off-field stuff going on than Ulster in the last couple of months. Beaten again at the weekend, but got out of Cape Town with a losing bonus point, which could be fairly valuable come the end of the season. They've got Montpellier away, like another away game. It's talk about a difficult start for Richie Murphy coming in there. Another away game, this time in the Challenge Cup against Montpellier. And just, it's about getting through these next couple of weeks to the point where they have three fairly winnable games. I see two of those at home. But looking straight away at this game against Montpellier, like what's Ulster's ceiling in this competition, do you think?
I think they can win it. I think they can beat Montpellier this weekend. Montpellier have zero interest in this Challenge Cup. They're in, which is ideal. You know, on paper, it's a very hard fixture, you know, the Montpellier of old. But Montpellier are, unfortunately for them, dragged into a dogfight to avoid a playoff. So they're looking over their shoulder at that. They lost at home last weekend to Stade Francais 12-10. And the Challenge Cup isn't like they want to be winning top 14s or European Cups. I mean, that's where they see themselves. Whereas the Challenge Cup for Ulster and for Richie Murphy would be a brilliant tonic to what's been a very obviously difficult season. So I think Ulster will get a lot of heart out of how to play against Stormers. That was a big ask. We know Stormers have a lot of quality, and Ulster for long periods looked like they could win that game. And Ulster don't have a brilliant squad. It's going to take a long time. It's going to take longer for Richie to really put his stamp on it. But he certainly hasn't played for the jerseys very quickly. And that I think that'll be enough on this weekend to beat Montpellier and a run the Challenge Cup. Obviously, with looking to make sure that they finish top eight in the URC. But it could just change the whole mood up in Ravenhill.
Yeah, it was funny feeling like a few weeks ago, I had it in the back of my head that, oh, you know, things hadn't been going well for Ulster in the URC. Maybe they might have just eased off and taken a bonus approach to the Challenge Cup, where we'll throw a second team out there and we'll see what way the chips fall. But when you have Richie Murphy in there now, every single game for him is an audition to be the head coach next season. So you have to expect that they're probably going to be going full on for this.
Not just that, for the players themselves as well, putting their best foot forward. I'm sure they want to play in every match that they can. And I think with Ulster, it's been obviously so disruptive, but it's looking for any sort of consistency they can get. Obviously, they got a bounce last week in terms of performance. Can they repeat it again on the road? I think Bernard's right. They don't have depth across their strong squad, but I think they have some very good players there. They have the bones of a good squad. And I don't know, Bernard, like, would Montpellier not play their strongest team at home, or just that they just won't perform? Or
no, I don't think they'll go totally the strongest. And normally, like, the fans would even realise and understand that top 14 is a priority. So I'd say it'll be a mixed selection. And they'll look at it, like, they'll hopefully put in a shift, but I don't think it's the be on and all to them. And certainly speaking to a couple of French journalists this week, they were kind of laughing at the idea that Montpellier would be desperate to win. And yeah, I'm not sure how they'll select, but they might start, you know, look to get some of the frontliners off early, but it'll just be very much focused on the next round of top 14. Like they were dead and buried. If you could be dead and buried in October, they had a horrendous start. They sacked Richard Cockerell and the coaching staff. And in fairness to them, they have salvaged some pride and given themselves a decent chance to stay up. But that home defeat to Stade Francais last weekend just puts them back too close to where they to the danger area. And I think that they will they look, Ulster have to go beat them, but it's not as important to Montpellier as it normally would be.
Bernard, last point on Ulster then. Stephen Kitsoff, what talk that he's going to be going back to South Africa in the summer, leaving his contract early, like this a mass exodus, it seems, happening at Ulster. What are the options for them going forward if he is to be leaving? Because
look at it. Obviously, we know that
as much as they have a difficult financial situation, if he's leaving, there's a bit of budget there to work with.
Yeah, because he wasn't originally one of the fellas I think that they were looking at cutting to get back on balance. And look, I still would like to hope that the RFU or they could find a little bit of money for Ulster, that they don't have to be as severe in their cutbacks as they were planning for under Dan. And maybe that's part of the reason Petrie is leaving as well, is that there was obviously conflict over budget. But the rumour about Kitchoff going back to Stormers, I suppose not surprising, really. The people who signed him are gone. Yeah. You know, that's one part of it. He has done a stint in Bordeaux before. You know, the Stormers have a new consortium that have bought them. Partly Irish-owned, actually.
Partly Irish-owned, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, you know, he could play with a very strong team, be back living in the Cape, obviously still very much part of South Africa, the South African international scene. So I think it makes sense for him. I actually think it makes sense for Ulster as well, even though he was obviously, on paper, a great signing. I don't think a loose head prop is necessary where you want to use your foreign player spots when things are tight. And certainly, you know, when you compare it to the Rouen Pienaars or the Marcel Coetzees, the influence they were able to have on Ulster, you know, it's very hard for Stephen Kitchoff to have that. You know what I mean? Stephen Kitchoff is a very good player. but very good player, particularly when he's part of a team like South Africa, who have lots of other fellas who can have big moments, you know. So it's only a rumour that he's looking to go back. I think it makes sense for him. I think it would make sense for Ulster as well. And it's just a case of, obviously, the new coach, when they get the decision on that, being able to decide where he wants to spend that resource, that money, but also that non-Irish qualified player spot. But it could be a really nice surprise for that new coach to have that flexibility in one position at least.
Yeah, but it depends when that new coach is named now, Bernard, to give them an opportunity for next season to get someone in wherever that position is, whether it's out half or in the forwards or wherever, that the coach is named early enough that there's a play, if there's a player on the market then to go.
The only thing, 100% Fiona, the only thing I think in Ulster, which is a little bit unique to everywhere else, is it looks Bryn Cunningham is pretty much going to be the de facto director of rugby now, and he his job has been recruitment for the last 6-7 years, and with John Petrie gone, he will step up. So, no, 100%. Normally, you would want your head coach to make that decision, but I think Ulster, if they see a player that they like, obviously we're talking hypothetically here, but I think Bryn has the power to maybe make that decision, and then obviously that's not ideal for the head coach, but they are a little bit unique. It's a bit like Leinster with Guy Easterby. If something was happening with Jack Nienaber or Leo, the train should keep running. You know what I mean? That and obviously you work it out later on. You trust them to do it. But you're 100% right. Obviously, the sooner they get a head coach about or tied down, the better. And hopefully it's Richie, and he can be part of that. But I think if that free foreign player spot opened up, Ulster are probably one of the few teams that are in position to kind of move anyway.
We're running out of time. Apologies, Connacht fans. We only have time for literally a brief little word. We'll talk about you more next week, I do promise. Connacht, 2 defeats from 2. Bernard, beaten 18-14 against Benetton at the weekend. Two very, very different kinds of defeats, I think, and one was considerably a better performance than the other. What chance do you give them with Bundiaki and Finlay Beelam possibly slash probably back in their team this weekend away to Pau in the Challenge Cup?
Pau are having a great season. They're on track to be thereabouts for
seventh place at the moment.
Yeah, seventh place for playoffs. And look at Connacht, in fairness, their back down over the last 2 weeks has been very, very mixed and match. And they played like that. So I thought Treviso was a far better performance, but that Lions performance was just, you can't even say it's out of character, because unfortunately they have a tendency to throw those in too far too often. And then can be great, like so the Bristol game, etc. How they often iron into pros, but that was a shocker. But they did salvage some respect and pride against Treviso and should have won it. I mean, I thought it was a game they should have closed out. But this is a big ask. I think Poe, even though they're obviously the priority would be top 14, they can have a hit at this home game for them. I think it's a different mindset than Montpellier, and that even with Bundy and Finn, I would have preferred to have Bundy and Finlay back for Treviso, then have him for this game. Week. Yeah, exactly. So it will help them, but it might be a step too far.
Fiona, do you think, just finally, their priority is more top 8 of URC than it is having a Challenge Cup run?
I think it has to be. I think that top 8 is so important for them, but I just think they've been so inconsistent across the board this season. I don't know where they're going, like whether they're even going to make top 8. I know it's really tight there in that, but I don't even know if they'll make it based on the teams that they've left. They still have Leinster and Munster away from home.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough ask for them. So Connacht and Ulster both away from home in the Challenge Cup on Sunday. Leinster against Leicester Tigers in the Champions Cup on Saturday evening. That is live on RT2 and RT Player, 7:30 p.m. live on the air, 8 p.m. kickoff. And you can follow a live blog as well on rt.ie/sport. Bernard, Fiona, it's been a pleasure as always. Thanks a million for joining us on the podcast, and we'll speak to you again soon.
See you soon.